I start burping. I turn on my microphone. I immediately start burping. It's like Pavlov's little dogs.
Famously burping dogs.
Do you have a little tagline? What do you have?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast whose own dystopian future is garbage fat stigma.
Huge spoiler for where this episode is going.
Huge spoiler. I'm Aubrey Gordon.
I'm Michael Hobbs, and you know all that already.
If you would like to support the show, you're already doing that. Thank you for doing that. Today, we're talking about two movies. We're talking about WALL-E, and then genuinely as a palate cleanser, we're talking about the movie Spy.
Your problematic fave and your unproblematic fave.
Yeah, less problematic fave. Totally.
Okay, so I just learned within the last 2 seconds that you have never seen WALL-E before.
Not until yesterday. And now I'm incandescent with rage.
I know. I watch it with my boyfriend, who has also never seen it, and he was like, eyes open in wonder. He loved the first 45 minutes. He's all like, oh, this is so delightful. And then the minute they get to the spaceship, you can just see his face just like melt into this grimace. And he's like, what the fuck is this?
It's fucking awful. So I looked into a little bit about the people behind WALL-E. It seems like there's this little crew that is behind a bunch of Pixar's, sort of Disney Pixar's greatest hits. So yes. The director of this movie wrote Finding Nemo, Finding Dory, Toy Story, Toy Story 2, and Monsters, Inc. Mm-hmm. It's also worth noting that the screenwriter on this also worked on Zootopia, Wreck-It Ralph, and Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Okay.
Both of those dudes are white men who are not fat.
I mean, I can't tell.
Totally. If you couldn't tell from watching, there were no fat people involved.
I do think that there's something really interesting about, you know, there's like the early Pixar movies, all of the classic Pixar movies.
Mm-hmm.
And like a very large number of them, I feel like, have terrible politics.
Yes.
The Incredibles is like a weird libertarian message about like people not being able to use their skills because of like affirmative action or something. It's like this weird.
What?
They say like when everybody's special, then nobody's special or something.
Oh, wow.
Ratatouille?
Well, Ratatouille has major food safety issues. That's the. That's my going concern with Ratatouille.
Canceled. Yeah. But it's the whole like plot of Ratatouille is that like criticism is bad, right? Like the main antagonist of the movie is the food critic. And it kind of implies that criticism is totally useless because those people can't do anything themselves. So they're just like sitting on the sidelines and whining, which is very rich coming from Pixar, which like every single one of its movies has gotten critically acclaimed by that point.
Yeah, totally.
But then I also really love those movies. Like, I rewatch those movies constantly, even though they have, like, I think bad politics.
Garbage politics.
Yeah, I don't think they're, like, indoctrinating the youth or anything. Like, I don't think they're dangerous movies, but it's just, like, the minute you start to sit down and think about their themes, you're like, oh, these are, like, really reactionary. And I think WALL-E has, like, the fat phobia, I think, is, I mean, obviously odious. There are other themes in the movie that are also kind of garbage.
Yes.
Which I think are like are wrapped up in the fat phobia too.
Yes, yes, yes.
So as a WALL-E newbie, Aubrey, walk us through the plot.
Okay. Basically, the movie sort of opens with this kind of world building stuff. You see some old newspaper headlines and you hear some sort of clips of news media saying that the Earth has now been covered in trash and it can no longer be inhabited.
The original name of the movie was Trash Planet.
So our main character is a very cute little robot named WALL-E that is a trash compactor robot. And it appears that WALL-E's job is to sort through the trash and when he's got enough of it, put it sort of in his tummy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets popped back out as a little compressed cube so that he can keep cleaning up Earth. And along the way, he'll find little treasures that he keeps for himself, like a fire extinguisher or like, as we find, a boot with a plant in it.
Yes.
So then he meets another robot who's like, looks like iPod robot. Like it looks like a very 2008 design of the future.
Yes. And he goes, brrr.
Totally. It makes little pleasing sounds. It has like, it's much more like a little person named Eve, and Wally and Eve like fall in love or become really good friends or develop a loving relationship with one another.
Yeah, there's a budding romance there, but then it's kind of cut short when she sees his plant and then goes like catatonic because that's her directive.
Yep. Eve gets this directive and gets essentially like beamed up onto this big spaceship thing that is taking her into outer space, and Wally doesn't want to be without her. So he grabs onto the outside of the spaceship and follows her.
Yes.
And that is where the story takes a real turn, Michael Hobbs.
Yeah, I think this is where the movie starts to become less delightful because, I mean, even on a rewatch, I thought the first 40 minutes, even for like a, whatever, 15-year-old movie, aged very well.
I will say two things about my experience of watching this movie. One is I started this movie on edge because its reputation preceded it.
Oh, yeah. For
me, I felt like at the time when this came out, people were waxing poetic about what an amazing movie it was. And then they would talk about, yeah, the planet's covered with trash and then everyone gets fat and it's terrible and it's blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
I so deeply don't want this. So I started this movie sort of on edge, which means that I found those first 45 minutes less enjoyable because I was just like waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, it's like you're watching the Poseidon Adventure and you're like, well, just get to the part where the boat flips.
Yes. So I spent a bunch of the movie waiting for that to happen, and then it did, and it was somehow worse than I thought it was going to be, which is really impressive.
It's worse than I remember it, and I remembered it being quite bad.
The other thing that I will say about my experience of watching this movie is it really called me on my bullshit with movies in general. When I watch them at home, I'm like 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like sort of half on my phone, or I'll like respond to an email or put away laundry or whatever. And you can't do that with this movie. There is not enough dialogue to get you through.
Oh, yeah, it's just like watching a foreign movie. You're like, oh, I have to actually pay attention.
I just didn't appreciate that it fully had my number, and I kept having to rewind and be like, God damn it.
All right, so walk us through the humans.
Oh, God. So we get to the spaceship. Oh, first of all, we should say there are artifacts of this corporation that seems to have had a really outsized influence on Earth, which they pretty much just mean America.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's evidence sort of back on Earth and on this ship where all of the humans are now of a corporation called By and Large, and it's B-U-Y and Large.
Right.
I think I took that correctly, as the movie intends, as a send up of consumerism and fatness, right? These two things that are sort of like perceived to be unflattering sides of Americanness.
Yeah.
By and Large runs this essentially like it's a giant cruise ship in the sky, is how I would describe it.
Yeah.
Every person is on a hovercraft version of a motorized scooter.
Yeah, like a mobility scooter. Yeah.
Every person is my size or larger. In fat activism world, we would call them super fats and infinifats. So people who, I would say, plus size clothes are often too small for them.
Right.
They have little like screens on their little hovercrafts, and they're always on their screens, and they're always eating food, and they're always sleeping. And when they're sleeping, they're snoring. And if they fall out, there's a moment in which someone falls out of their hovercraft.
Yeah, it's scooter so bad. Thing.
And there's an announcement saying, please stay stationary until droids can come, like, put you back in your scooter. And this person is just sort of straining on their back like a potato bug.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Do you want to hear an excerpt from the Roger Ebert review?
Do I?
He's usually someone with, like, fairly good politics, but everyone's politics on this issue are so fucking garbage. In the middle of his review, he says, this is not entirely their fault. Since generations in the low-gravity world aboard the Axiom have evolved humanity into a race whose members resemble those folks you see whizzing around Walmart in their electric shopping cart.
Get fucked.
Un-fucking-believable.
I mean, absolutely get fucked. This is also, fuck, god damn it, this was also People of Walmart era.
Dude, I know. I still have, like, nightmares about that fucking blog.
So there's also, like, given the cultural context at the time, there's also a shit ton of classism in this.
I mean, I think that the fatphobia in this movie is, like, emblematic of this broader ideology that the movie has with this future of humanity, right? So the the vision of the future that the movie is putting out is that we're destroying the planet. We're destroying the planet because of consumerism, right? We're allowing corporations to take over our lives and our countries, et cetera, et cetera. And taking this to its logical conclusion, right? Like, if current trends continue, we will become these, like, completely mindless automatons. Everyone in the movie is watching screens in their little mobility scooters, and they're, like, completely unplugged from their environment. And there's this really, like, condescending and weird scene between two of the humans where one of them, like, touches the other one. And he's like, oh, as if he, like, hasn't experienced physical touch in some amount of time. But then there's also, like, babies in this world, so I don't know what the fuck. Like, there isn't a lot of world building once we get to the ship. But it's, like, it's this extremely condescending view of the future that it's, like, we're all being mass marketed into oblivion. And part of the oblivion is that we're all becoming fat people, and we're all becoming, like, disabled people. Like, the fatness is a symbol of how, like, stupid and bovine human beings are becoming in this way that is, like, back projected onto the fat people that we have in society now. They're the ones that have already reached this dystopian place where, like, they're drinking sodas all the time. Like, the amount of, like, weird moralizing around soda in this movie is fucking incredible.
I would like it to be known that I am drinking a giant soda while we're recording this, just as a big fucking thumb in the eye of this absolute garbage. Part of what bothers me about this movie so fucking much is that it is sort of a lefty perspective. It's a set of politics that I would like to be able to sign on to, and then the way that those politics get expressed are in a way that makes it impossible for people who look like me to sign on to them.
Yeah.
In order to be like, this is a good movie with a good point, you also have to assent to all of this garbage anti-fatness, all of this proud ableism, this particular sort of set of corporate critiques that are not about, like, this is unchecked power that has undue influence on policy and that sort of thing, but is about, like, the worst thing that's going to happen is that they're going to make you fat.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on a weird space cruise ship.
Where, like, the economy doesn't make any sense to me. Like, are any of these people working? Like, what are they buying from the corporate? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
There's no part of this world that makes sense to me. Also, like, at the end of the movie, there's, like, a triumphant shot of one of the human characters introducing the other human characters to, like, the idea of farming and growing vegetables.
Oh, right.
And I had a moment where I was like, if they don't even know what it means to grow things, what the fuck were they eating?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, what? How?
It's like the opposite of J.R.R. Tolkien world building, where he's like, here's a 40-page footnote about this one, like, character that has no dialogue.
Yeah.
And this one is just like, there's a giant corporation, but no one works, and, like, no one fucks, but there's babies. Just like, whatever. So they get to the spaceship. Then what happens, Aubrey?
I feel like I'm having, like, a reading comprehension test. So they get on the ship. And one of the things that I recall about this time is that we meet the captain of the ship.
Yes.
And we find out that they are calling this, like, a 5-year cruise while the planet gets cleaned up. And one of the first things that we learn is that it's the 700th anniversary of the 5-year cruise. But also, side note, we get a very impassioned speech from the captain at one point about how, like, Earth is our home and we have to go back to home and I'm not going to stand here and do nothing. And I'm like, how many generations back was it home?
Yeah, we're going back to, like, the Black Plague times.
Right.
The amount of time backwards.
Yes, that doesn't have, like, a real emotional punch for me.
They also imply in the section when we find out it's been 700 years, they imply that the humans have, like, de-evolved.
Yep. So the head of, by and large, the corporation is played by Fred Willard, and he says at one point, you and your crew may have experienced some slight bone loss, and then it shows these three silhouettes that are fully, they genuinely look like the silhouettes that are used on some BMI charts.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
The first one is like an ostensibly like thin silhouette with the human skeleton as we know it now. And then the next one is more fat and less bones. And then the third one is the most fat and the least bones.
This was the part where my boyfriend started like moaning. He's like,
yeah. Yeah. This is also the point at which I stopped taking notes. because I was just like, I fucking can't.
One thing that I learned relatively early after this movie came out, and I confirmed while looking into this episode, is that in the original version of the script, they were supposed to go up to this spaceship and find kind of like jellies. They were supposed to be just kind of like green goo, I guess. And it was supposed to be a twist at the end of the movie that they were actually humans.
Oh, it's very like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and they even mentioned that like the Wikipedia entry. It was like supposed to be like a Planet of the Apes reveal. Mm-hmm. I don't know, part of me feels like that almost would have been better. Because then it's like they wouldn't necessarily have to be fat people. You could do something with the idea that they've been up there so long that they no longer need these like human Earth-like skills. And that's actually like kind of an interesting idea. Like what would human bodies do if we lived in zero gravity for, you know, however many generations that is? But instead of doing that, it's just like, oh, they're just like, it's just normal people, but they just got super fat.
Yeah, and it is consequence enough to have a planet covered in trash.
Right.
And to have people not be able to inhabit the planet that they lived on for so many years, right?
Right.
So basically what we find out is that Eve has gone back to the ship because there is sort of this mechanism in these robots and in the ship that is built around this idea that like, once you find life on Earth again, which this plant that they have found represents life on Earth, that means that the planet is once again habitable and folks can return to Earth. So Otto, the evil autopilot system, keeps trying to stop him from autopiloting back to Earth. And when the captain asks why, Otto keeps saying, like, that's top secret. And my recollection is he basically just asks enough times and then Otto's like, fine, you can know why.
I know. Siri doesn't do that for me.
So what Otto then shows is a video of Fred Willard, the sort of by and large leader, saying essentially, we can't go back to Earth. We're not doing it. It's been too long. And what's his reasoning?
I have seen this movie so many times and it's still not totally clear to me what this like big twist is. I mean, I think it's basically that like the Earth is so dead that there's nothing to go back to and that the planet had been evacuated.
Yep.
So the Earth is sucky and sour and Mad Max, but then the captain decides like, well, we should go back anyway because it's Earth.
And that's when we get this like impassioned speech from the captain about like, that's my mm-hmm. home and I can't just let it go this way. Like we gotta like protect our home. And again, I don't know, man, I don't have a lot of personal strong emotional pull to like 700 years ago anything.
The idea that the entire ship would want to go back to somewhere that like their great 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 grandparents hadn't even experienced.
Yeah.
And like they're all sort of onto it like on a whim, even though like life would be unbelievably shitty there and it's like really good on the spaceship.
Totally.
Is a little far-fetched, but like whatever, they need something for the third act, I guess.
Also, I feel like there's a way in which our discussion about this movie could read as like wet blanket shit. I will say there are a lot of Disney Pixar movies that I really, really love and that I don't
Same.
Read with this kind of close lens. I'm not trying to be like the adult who's like, look at this thing for kids. Why'd they make it so bad?
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is like, this is a movie that so many people loved and also the way that it relishes hating fat people and disabled people
Yeah.
just kept pulling me out of the movie.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I can't hang with this. This is so weird.
I can hang with the bad politics of The Incredibles because it's like a couple lines of dialogue, you know, it's like, sort of like the message of the movie, but like for most of the movie's runtime, you're not really thinking about that stuff. You can kind of forget it. Whereas this, it's like the minute they get to the spaceship, the movie goes off the rails. The fat phobia is just like screaming at you, right? Because it's like yes. it's part of like the plotting of the movie.
Yes.
It's so gross. And you really can't separate the politics of the movie from like everything that happens in the last like hour of it.
I feel like I've done a lot of writing over a lot of years that talks about this idea of fat people as a morality tale, as the moral to the story. And there are times when people struggle to understand that. And I now feel like if people are struggling to understand that, I'm just going to show them this movie.
Right.
Because like, this is it. Like, right. The only reason that the people in this movie are fat are to illustrate how bad things have gotten and to elicit shame and fear from the audience, as if this is a consequence of climate change.
Right.
And as if this is a consequence of our collective sort of dereliction of duty in terms of, like, taking care of the planet and resisting corporations and so on and so forth. And it really fucking sucks to have politics that in some ways align with what this movie is advancing. And it also sucks to, like, be a fat person and have to sit through all of this proud, happy rejection. And presumably at the time, to sit in a theater full of people who I would assume are fucking laughing at fat people falling off of their hover scooters.
There's a couple of just straight up fat jokes. Like, there's a thing where the captain tries to lean forward in his chair, but he can't. So he has to, like, bzzz, like, lean the chair up on its own.
There's a point at which the captain gets surprised by something, and he has, like, it's either a toy or a drink or a something resting on his belly. And when he gets surprised, that thing sort of slides slowly off his belly.
Right. And, like, that's just a straight up fat joke. I don't know what the reaction was in the theaters, but it's, like, it's very clear what the filmmakers are doing there.
Yeah.
There's this thing at the end where, I guess, like, a symbol of the triumph of the humans and how the humans want to go back to Earth is that they start getting out of their chairs and standing up. And that's the, like, we're ready to go back. But it's just so, just, like, so condescending.
Yeah.
It feels really ableist, and it feels like, you know, here's a bunch of fat people that have never wanted to walk around. Here's a bunch of fat people that have never wanted to see beyond the little screens in front of their faces.
Yeah.
It seems to imply that the only way that somebody would get fat is if they just have no other interests in their lives.
Yeah. And if they can't think for themselves, and right. if they don't have any perspective or ambition or interest in anything, this is what happens when you are a husk of a person and when you give up right. essentially free will.
Also, I don't know if you noticed this, but I had such a stress response when Fred Willard is doing, he's like the CEO of By and Large. He's saying that, you know, the Earth is terrible and we have to flee the Earth. And he says, did you notice this? He says, it's going to be fine. We're going to stay the course. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did.
That's such a deep cut. Like, that was something in a Bush speech yep. about the Iraq War.
That was a huge thing at the time.
Oh, yeah, huge. And it brought me back to this era of just shit politics. Of just how annoying it was to have these little kind of references to current events showing up in movies in this, like, really toothless one-to-one way.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck Bush. I mean, they're correct on the merits, but it's just, like, a lot of this just, like, weird, smug, quote-unquote satire that isn't funny. It's just like, haha, he said a thing that Bush said.
It is a weird, funny throwback to, like, what I consider in my brain to be the Air America era
yeah.
of oh, U.S. Yeah. politics. For those of you playing along at home, there was a radio network called Air America, and their morning show was hosted by a true fucking Mad Lib of hosts. It was Mark Maron, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Oh my God. But we should end the movie. We have the triumphant let's go back to Earth scene.
So they get back to Earth, and there is a shot that I feel like sort of encapsulates quite a bit about this movie, which is sort of like this sort of Mad Max-y kind of hazy sepia toned landscape with a city skyline in the background, which also, if it's been 700 years.
Don't overthink it.
I'm totally overthinking it. You're correct. So city skyline in the background, foregrounded by a group of these like fat humans who have been on this spaceshipy thing. And the captain is explaining to these other fat people what farming is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shot continues to pan forward and we see Wally and Eve together again back on Earth.
And they're in love. We're back to the love story. Which is very well done and cute. The last like 3 minutes are extremely adorable.
That was the thing that I thought was, I was like, this actually feels like if you just did the robot love story stuff without yeah. all of the world building and blah, 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 blah. This would be a really great Pixar short. Before yes. a longer movie.
I don't know if you noticed because you were probably on your phone by this point, but the ending credits are the humans rebuilding society. So yes. there's these little vignettes as you're watching the credits of like, now we're fishing and now we're growing more plants, whatever. Apparently they added that to the end because even the kids who watched this movie with like, you know, as focus groups before it came out, as soon as they got to Earth, the entire audience was like, this isn't going to pan out.
Wow.
This seems far-fetched that the humans would actually want to do this. Earth sucks now. So they had to add, they didn't have the money, so they had to add these little vignettes in the ending credits to be like, no, it all worked out. Everybody's happy and fine. And also, nobody's fat anymore, by the way. All the kids grow up thin once they're on Earth.
So the credits are actually when I tuned back in. Because I was like, it's safe now. The plot has ended. Come back up for air.
One thing I found very interesting is that, of course, I Googled WALL-E fat phobia before this. Because I was like, well, surely somebody's written about this, right? There's got to be some like essay somewhere.
It's got to be.
I can see what the state of like the discourse is. Interestingly, I didn't really find any here's why WALL-E is fat phobic things. Really? I don't think anybody's kind of made the case, or at least not in my like whatever 1 hour of kind of clicking around on the internet. It's probably out there somewhere. What I did find, however, was a lot of like right-wing assholes. You know, they make these videos making fun of fat activists.
Yes, I am familiar. I have been a subject of a number of them.
It's so bad. There's this whole economy of people, especially on YouTube, that will find some random comment by some random person. And they'll be like, now the fat activists say it's fat phobic to work out at the gym or whatever. And they'll do a whole big, long, quote unquote, debunking of literally just like what some random person said on the internet somewhere and cast that as like canonical of all fat activists.
Yep.
So I skimmed through a couple of these and they found like little tiny Tumblr posts from like whatever, 2012, some random person posts on Tumblr, just watched WALL-E last night, it's fat phobic, LOL. And then these dudes, it's always dudes, will do these long videos like debunking, like, oh, you're not even supposed to watch WALL-E anymore. So it's weird that it's created much more anti-WALL-E is fat phobic media than WALL-E is fat phobic media, which feels typical of a lot of these things, honestly, that there's more anti-left-wing rhetoric about something than actual left-wing rhetoric about it.
Right. And I think there's like fat activist rhetoric around it, but I don't think that that's the same as left-wing rhetoric, because I think the left is often real garbage on fat stuff and treats fat people like shit very frequently and often proudly.
Right.
There is this link that people really love to grab onto where they sort of imagine that corporations are making people fat, and part of the badness of corporations is that they're making people fat, not that they're like creating monopolies and unduly influencing government and all of the shit that they're actually doing, like driving down wages and undercutting labor laws and all this sort of shit, right? Instead, it decides to focus on like, let's all laugh at fat people and also be like horrified that this could be our future. You too could become a fat person. Holy shit.
Right.
I don't think there is an argument to make here that this is not an anti-fat movie.
Aubrey, I have some YouTube videos to recommend to you. I have some people ready to own you. Should we talk about Spy very briefly? I'm struggling because I have literally nothing to say about this movie.
So like, listen, you suggested watching WALL-E and I was like, that's a great idea. Mm. And I was also like, I know its reputation and I would like a palate cleanser. So the palate cleanser that I chose for myself in a totally nonsensical pairing is the movie Spy, Paul Feig directed, starring Melissa McCarthy. And Mike, you had seen this one years ago, yes?
Yeah, when it came out, I really liked Melissa McCarthy. I remember thinking at the time that it was like an above average action comedy. Mm-hmm. And then I rewatched it and I thought it was an above average action comedy.
Yes, correct.
So, okay, to just give like a very brief plot rundown, it's basically Melissa McCarthy is like a frumpy spinster. She's like the eyes and ears of Jude Law, who is a spy for the CIA. And then there's like some high concept premise hijinks ensue in a like Air Bud kind of way where they're like, well, there's no rule that a dog can't play basketball. Yeah, they're like, we need Melissa McCarthy to go into the field, and then more hijinks ensue. And basically the rest of the movie is this woman who's like a fish out of water who has to like be a spy. It's very well executed comedy of like this normal person who all of a sudden has to be doing all of this spy shit. And the cast is great, except for fucking Jude Law, whose American accent is atrocious. Everyone else is great, but he just sucks ass, and I don't know why he's in this.
I'll also say, the movie is like very clearly a parody of James Bond movies.
Yes.
And part of what I like so much about this movie is that it really is sort of like, what would happen if a fat person showed up in this environment that is kind of defined by thinness and conventionally yeah. attractive people sort of being everywhere, right? And what happens is everybody's weird ass fucking judgments about fat people and about this fat middle-aged woman are like showing up in their responses to her doing this. So like she gets this sort of news that she's going to be able to go out into the field and Jason Statham throws a fucking fit.
Ah, right.
Like he's mad that she's getting promoted. Mm. Her boss super duper underestimates her. Allison Janney plays this like real great asshole boss. Her identities that she gets, her cover identities are all
right.
sad fat people from middle America is sort of what they're driving at.
Right.
There's a running gag where everyone assumes she has cats. And it's like, yeah. why did I think you had cats? I don't know. Right. Like you sort of see this person who's underestimating herself, who's sort of sidelining herself, who like doesn't want to take up too much space, but they're also making visible all of the messages that have taught her that in this right. specific space and all of the ways that this specific space is making things harder for her. And the anti-fatness here right. is like really hemming in her effectiveness. Like they tell her when she goes out into the field that she can't get too close to the subject. And she ends up like kind of getting in there and like getting a bunch of intelligence that no one else was going to get. This sort of villain character played by Rose Byrne doesn't think she's a threat in any real way.
The movie is very good about the people acting like the, you know, she's a cat lady with no basis. The joke is on them.
Yeah.
The joke is always about like how clueless they are.
Yeah.
Not about like she actually is really like this uncool.
Yeah. There's a lot about this movie that is like deeply imperfect. There's a lot about this movie that like doesn't age totally great. Its consent politics are real weird. Like it's both making jokes that are like at the expense of this Peter Serafinowicz character who's like the gropiest dude that ever groped.
I thought the gropey stuff definitely has like aged badly, but it was also nice to see a fat actress just like getting hit on and nobody making it about that.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't like, what a weirdo for being into this fat lady. He's just into her.
Yeah.
And that was nice. You never see that. You never see that in movies.
Totally, totally. And, you know, at the end of this movie, Jude Law's character like asks her out to dinner
yeah.
and she sort of turns him down and you also never see that shit.
Yeah.
I think that what I really appreciate about this movie and what really resonates about this movie for me is that it's doing a thing that almost no other movie that I have seen has done, which is it's trying to be nice to a fat person
yes.
and it's trying to see the world through the eyes of a fat person.
Yeah.
It's like actually doing the work of like, oh yeah, if everybody made all these shitty assumptions about you, you would feel kind of like frustrated and over it, but also you right. would kind of take it in on some level. I think a bunch of it really resonates because it's fucking trying to make something that like approaches accuracy. And that isn't, again, just sort of an object lesson for thin people in like, here's why it's terrible to be fat and here's why you should never get fat.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
Tell me.
When I was 13 and coming to grips with my sexuality, I would go to like the video store and I would get the fucking tackiest, cheapest, most mediocre fucking gay movie. And I would be way into it and I would like watch it 10 times because there were so few gay movies. Like I was crawling through the desert and drinking the fucking sand because that was like all that was around was just like shit, like low budget, so poorly written, just the worst movies. But you could not get any other representation on screen at all. And I feel like it's kind of like that with this movie where it's like, okay, what are the movies with good politics about fat people? There's like four.
There's so few. Also, I feel like what you were just recounting was the story of like so many queer ladies' relationship to the L word.
Dude, I know. I watched the L word. I watched the whole thing. Whoa. That show was so bad. It was so bad. That's how thirsty I was. I was watching lesbian representation because there was nothing else.
You were like, there's nothing left for me. I guess I have
also, Queer as Folk was not good.
Yeah.
It was not good.
The other things that really stood out to me on this rewatch of Spy, one, there is this sort of moment that's like a little gag and then it's sort of tossed off. But I was like, oh no, this is a super real thing for a lot of the fat people in my life. is when Melissa McCarthy is talking about the advice she got from her mom.
Okay.
She's sitting at dinner with Miranda Hart's character and she's like, well, you know, it's like my mom always said, well-behaved women often make history.
Oh, yeah.
And her friend is like, that's not the saying. And she goes, she had a bunch of great ones, like, just blend in, let somebody else win, give up on your dreams. And I was like, yeah, that's actually like a kind of parenting that fat kids get.
Yeah.
Lower your expectations. You're probably not going to get that thing. Just chill out a little bit. Don't put yourself in the center. That all resonated in such a big way.
That's fascinating.
And the other thing that resonated, which feels a little sticky to talk about, but also feels important to talk about, is her relationship to Jude Law's character.
She has a crush and he's exploiting her, basically.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is the closest that this movie gets to a sad fat person narrative. And it is a pretty classic sad fat person narrative, that a fat person will have unrequited love for a thinner person and either feel really sad about it because they understand that that thinner person is quote unquote out of their league and they will never be together, or that they're totally unaware and it becomes comedic that they think that a thinner person would be into them, right? Those are sort of the two paths that that usually takes. What resonated with me about that relationship is that because it was sort of building out this world that showed all of these prompts that teach you how she feels about herself and how she learned to feel that way about herself, it gives you a real sense of like, she's not responding to him as if he can't desire her because of anything other than these sort of messages that she's getting really consistently. Like, he presents her with a case of jewelry, right? And is like, open it, I got this thing for you. And she sort of thinks it's going to be this grand romantic gesture. And then it's this horrible, hideous cartoon cupcake necklace.
Right.
And he's like, it's because you love cake. Like, if that isn't a clear signal of someone not being desired, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that really resonated with me about that is that she handles all of that emotional weight in a way that I have seen myself do, which is like working to be of service to people, that she'll just do kind of whatever he asks her to and kind of whatever her boss asks her to, right? Like, she's not a person with real strong boundaries, generally speaking, in the first part of this movie. And that to me resonated as like, that's how fat people are trained to be around thin people, which is like, your presence here is already inconvenient. It's unsightly and you're not really sort of part of the group. So your job is to make yourself fucking useful. And that could be through holding a bunch of emotional space for thinner people. It could be agreeing to fire his gardener. And then she is so conflict averse that she also doesn't fire the gardener and instead just does the work of the gardener.
Right.
All of this totally feels like someone who has learned that their very presence is burdensome and their job is to relieve that burden, which is a thing that I have felt for long stretches as a fat person, because again, how people respond to you reinforces that.
How do you think that's passed down? Like, how do fat people kind of get that message?
I think part of it comes through sort of physical environment and accommodations kind of stuff. That if a fat person needs something different than a thin person needs, that gets met with heavy eye rolling and a lot of like, ugh, we don't have that. And like, sort of the expectation is if something doesn't work for you, then you should just have been thinner to start with. Right. If these seats aren't comfortable for you, if this chair isn't sturdy enough for you, if this meal doesn't work for you, and that's all way tied up in ableism. Mm-hmm. I would say that there is also an unspoken expectation from many, many thin people that I have known that I would hold sort of an infinite amount of emotional support space for them. I mean, I think there are so many, it's a very classic movie trope of like the fat best friend who has no plot line of her own, no life of her own. She's just there to move the plot along for the thin person and to be like, you can do it. Have some confidence. Love yourself. Go out there and get them. And I think that that also sets an expectation in the minds of thin people that that is the role of fat people in the world. Fat folks learn to pick that up and thin folks learn to lay it down. This is also, I will say, extremely personal to me, and it's not a thing that I've talked to a ton of other fat people about. So other fat folks may have different experiences, but like this has felt like an incredibly clear pattern to me personally.
Yeah.
I have had a number of friendships that have ended over this where I would just get friends who would call me and just start talking about what was going on with them. And if I brought up at any point, even 45 minutes or an hour into the conversation, that like, actually, I've got something going on too, can I talk to you about that? They would get irritated that I wanted to say anything.
And probably not a sense of what that dynamic is. In a way that probably you're noticing that dynamic, but probably they aren't noticing it. I
absolutely
imagine.
And in the times that I have brought that up, it has gone very poorly.
Yeah. I was just going to say.
And particularly, I will say a whole lot of that sort of emotional space that folks are expecting is to process through their body image stuff and how afraid they are to get fat.
Yeah, that has to be a part of it.
I hate it. I don't want to hear about how my body is your worst nightmare.
You know what line in a movie I think about probably more than any other one?
Whoa, what? I'm so interested to know.
Did you ever see What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
No, I never did, also because of the fat stuff.
I could not stop reading about that movie after I saw it, but like I can never watch it again. It's like too rough. There's a scene in there where there's the fat mom, that actress Darlene Cates seems like a really, really nice lady, and there's her son, and he's dating Juliette Lewis, and Juliette Lewis comes over and she meets the mom, like, hi, this is my mom. And the first thing she says is, the fat mom says, I haven't always been like this.
Yeah.
It's this idea that like a fat person's like first thing that they say when they meet somebody is an apology. And it's like, you're noticing this about me, and I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
That probably gets internalized in people to the extent that it's just sort of the way that they go about the world, and they kind of treat other people with that expectation, probably.
Yes, totally. That is a thing that I have internalized deeply for myself, and it's a thing I'm still really struggling with training myself out of, is starting with an apology in some way. It's a surprisingly hard and deep thing to do. And I would say the flip side of that is that there are people for whom, if you don't start with an apology or an explanation of your body, they will get very invasive, or they will get very angry. So like, that's also like a self-protective learned behavior. There have been plenty of people who I will meet who will not be able to proceed, or will not consent to proceed with the conversation unless and until I give them a satisfactory explanation for why I'm fat.
How does that play out?
Oh, here's a fucking doozy of a story for you. I started out in college at Portland State University here in town, and I worked for the literary arts like student group there, and we hosted a bunch of readings, and one of them we had was like outside in a common space at the university. I was serving food at this event, and I was probably 18 at the time. And this guy came up to me and he went, when did your dad leave? And I was like, what? And he went, when did your dad leave? And I was so stunned that I just told him I was 14. And he went, is that when you started eating?
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's an extreme example, but there are also people who will like try and play it cool and then work it into conversations and be like, hey, so have you tried like keto? Have you tried paleo? Have you tried Whole 30? Or they'll just start talking about their diet and be like, I've got a copy of the book, you can borrow it, right? All of these are signals that are like, your body is wrong, I'm noticing it, and this is going to be a barrier to social interaction with me. Until I feel satisfied and I can like chill out about your body being what your body is. And that is a thing that I think many of the thin folks in my life just don't experience.
I have a multiracial friend who like, you can't really tell to look at him what race he is. And he says when he goes on dates with guys from Tinder, they always find like weird ways to ask about his like heritage. It's like they really need to know on the first date, like, what race are you, bro?
Yeah. Where are you from? No, where are you really from?
And people know you're not supposed to do that anymore. So they have these like, there's other ways of doing it, of like, oh, so have you guys ever done like ancestry.com? Or like there's workarounds now. This is something that I, like the whitest man alive, have never experienced. People look at me and they're like, there's a white guy. I don't need to know anything about that
guy.
Yeah,
same.
But it's only when there's this ambiguity, it's like, I'm going to throw in a couple little questions because like I need clarity on this point before we can move on.
This is going to be on my mind and it's going to be front of mind for as long as I'm talking to you. And until I get this thing handled, I'm just going to keep inserting it into the conversation and inserting it into the conversation and finding other entry points and like garbage. It's a tough thing. And I feel like this movie did such a good job of illustrating how that kind of stuff can show up.
Right.
So there's a point at which in this movie, Melissa McCarthy's boss, who's played by Allison Janney, gives her another false identity at the end of the movie. And it's another fucking sad fat person.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's Jude Law's character is like, she's just joking. It's just a joke. And they all have a big laugh. And then Allison Janney goes, it's not a joke. I don't have a sense of humor. It's like, they're like taking away any excuse. Like, it is really just her boss is being kind of a dick to her.
Right.
Her boss instructs the gadget guy to make all of her cool spy gadgets into things like hemorrhoid wipes and foot fungus spray and like a watch for the movie Beaches. Right. Like, these are like clear acts of aggression.
Right.
And her triumph is not letting that hold her back, which is like a challenging narrative that's not always my favorite, but like it is pretty satisfying to watch someone like triumph when jerks think they can't.
I'm realizing why I have nothing insightful to say about this movie now. I'm like not a fat person, so none of that read.
You're like, it's like, fine. And I was like, no, it's meaningful.
Yeah, it's because I don't know all these, like, I guess you'd call them microaggressions fat people experience, that it's like these are in keeping with a pattern, whereas that doesn't necessarily show up for me because I just am less aware of that pattern.
Yeah, I will say I really liked theater, unsurprisingly. Big theater kid energy happening over here. Hello. The closest I got to the sort of false identity stuff was like casting in middle school and high school. The roles that I would get cast in, I would like audition sort of broadly is how they did it, right? Like you audition for kind of any role and then the director chooses what role you get. And the roles that I would get were small roles, but like almost always roles of service.
Oh, interesting.
So I would play like a maid or a nanny. Like one of the characters that I played was a housekeeper who was like a pretty significant character, but her only lines were yes, sir, and no, sir.
Oof.
So like, I don't know if that's a director who was like, I feel like she could really do a lot with this part that doesn't have much going on with it. Or if that director is like, just make her the maid.
Right.
It starts to illustrate this pattern where you're like, well, it must be this thing because fucking everything else is this thing.
Also, all this stuff is happening at a subconscious level too.
Yes, totally.
Even if you did try to confront it, you could never confirm what's really going on. And also, people always have a fragility response to conversations about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they get defensive, understandably, but unproductively defensive.
Yeah.
This did such a good job of being like, part of the reason that she is out of touch with her own power and skill is that other people are consistently telling her that she doesn't have power and she doesn't have skill.
Right.
Anyway, I find it to be a deeply imperfect movie, but one that's like really enjoyable and light and fun, and also feels really honest about anti-fatness in some really important ways.
I mean, it's no L word.
Great. Yes. I feel seen.